On this 14th day of June 2011 in San Diego, California, we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. And we are in Chapter 2 entitled Contents of the Gita Summarized, text number 47.
Give it time.
Karmanyevadikaraste Mapaleshu kadachana Ma karma palahetu bhur Mate sangostva karmani. Translation: you have a right to perform your prescribed duty, but you are not entitled to the fruits of action. Never consider yourself the cause of the results of your activities, and never be attached to not doing your duty. Report: there are three considerations here: prescribed duties, capricious work, and inaction. Prescribed duties are activities enjoined in terms of one's acquired modes of material nature. Capricious work means actions without the sanction of authority. And inaction means not performing one's prescribed duties. The Lord advised that Arjuna not be inactive, but that he perform his prescribed duty without being attached to the result. One who is attached to the result of his work is also the cause of the action. Thus, he is the enjoyer or sufferer of the result of such actions. As far as prescribed duties are concerned, they can be fitted into three subdivisions, namely routine work, emergency work, and desired activities. Routine work performed as an obligation in terms of the scriptural injunctions without desire for results is action in the mode of goodness. Work with results becomes the cause of bondage. Therefore, such work is not auspicious. Everyone has his proprietary right in regard to prescribed duties, but should act without attachment to the result. Such disinterested obligatory duties doubtless lead one to the path of liberation. Arjuna was therefore advised by the Lord to fight as a matter of duty without attachment to the result. His non-participation in the battle is another side of attachment. Such attachment never leads one to the path of salvation. Any attachment, positive or negative, is cause for bondage. Inaction is sinful. Therefore, fighting as a matter of duty was the only auspicious path of salvation for Arjuna. Om Gyanatimarandasya Gyanandana Shalakya Chukshu Unmiditamena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisance to him and all members of Sri Parampara. So, it's interesting that in this age of unemployment or threatened unemployment, that everyone has a right to perform duties in Krishna consciousness. In other words, there's always a job to be done in Krishna consciousness. But the caveat is that one can't desire material fruits for the work. And you can't consider yourself the ultimate cause of the result. Now, if you consider this, these three things, I always wondered at this, the genius of this verse. So the first thing is that you have a right to perform your prescribed duty. Well, that sounds very good. A materialist may say, great, I have a job. But you can't enjoy the fruits. So this is that's a motive for inaction, right? Well, maybe at least I can get credit for it, right? No. Ma karma palahetu bhur. Ma, you can't consider yourself the cause of it. So ultimately, Krishna provides everything in our understanding, right? He gives the ingredients that you work with. He gives the intelligence that you work with. He gives the senses that you work with. So what credit do you get? You know? Independently. This is Krishna consciousness. You know? All glories to Srila Prabhupada, all glories to Krishna. What am I doing? I'm simply desiring to serve. And Krishna's providing everything. So this is how you stay humble. So on a material level, this cuts off every avenue of material motive, you see? In other words, you have a right to perform your activity, but you can't enjoy the fruits, and you can't get famous for it. You can't feel pride, you know, separate pride, materialistic pride. I said, then I won't do anything. No, don't be attached to not doing your duty either. You see? So he's got you from every angle. So the idea is that Arjun, he didn't want to do his duty, his swadharma, which was to fight in the battlefield, right? That was his natural thing. He's a fighter, born fighter. And he wanted to enjoy the fruits of not fighting, namely seeing his friends and relatives alive. You know, that was the fruit. At least that won't be. He was definitely considering that he would be the cause of their death. That he didn't want that. He was very afraid of that. Being the cause means you would be responsible. You have the responsibility for it. If it's a good thing, you get good karma. If it's a bad thing, you get bad karma. That's what it means to be responsible, to be the hetu, you know. But at every angle, this verse cuts him off. You're not the ultimate doer. The whole idea is that if you act on Krishna's behalf under the guidance of the spiritual master and the shastra, then you're not incurring good or bad karma. You're not entitled to any fruit, material fruit, but you get the ultimate fruit, the ultimate treasure, which is, number one, getting out of this material bondage, and number two, returning to that original state of an ending bliss of service to Krishna. That's the goal, you know. It's not a phala in the sense of a material thing, but it's the greatest treasure you can imagine. So you see, there's kind of a dual mentality there. On one side, especially in the stage of vaidhi bhakti, vaidhi means according to rules and regulations. This is what a Krishna is trying to bring Arjun to. You have a responsibility. You have a duty to fight. Not just start for the basis of fighting. In other words, without any attachment to the results. So we're trying to come to the point of duty. That means vaidhi. That means following the rules and regulations. Even if you don't want to do it, you do something you know you should do. Even if you want to do something you know you shouldn't, you don't do it. That's what vidhi bhakti means. It's sadhana bhakti. So, but at the end of that, we know, you know, that will come a stage when that which is difficult now is you're spontaneously attracted to, because it's natural. We read from the Nectar of Instruction, the Upadeshamrita, where Rupa Goswami promises that. He's our acharya. You know, he says, Syat Krishna Nama Charitari Satapya Vidya. Sita means it's very tasty. You know, what is? Krishna Nama, the holy name of Krishna, his activities, all of these descriptions about him are just like pure nectar. And we read about the great devotees relishing day and night. That's what they're eating. The Goswamis are just tasting that. They feel completely nourished in body, mind, and soul. So, Syat Krishna Nama, Charitari, etc., everything about Krishna is just like nectar. But avidya, because of avidya, ignorance, pittopatapta-rasanasya-narojikanam, it tastes bitter. In other words, we cannot find full satisfaction in hearing and chanting about Krishna and simply serving Krishna with our senses. Although we know, right, from the Shastra, from the great acharya, that this is fully satisfying for the soul. Right? That is no ananta. What is that verse you memorize? Brahma saukyam tvanantam. Just think of what those four syllables mean, or whatever it is, five syllables. Brahma saukya means the happiness of Brahman, of contacting Krishna through devotional service, anantam, endless. We can't even conceive of that now. Any pleasure or happiness we have on the material level has a beginning and an end. And whatever happiness there was, it's just a vague memory in the past, or you're hankering for some future happiness. And then if you're fortunate, you actually experience something for a short time, right? And then it changes, and you go on, you get older. And it's very frustrating, because the soul, by nature, anandamaya, abhyasat, made of bliss. Anandamaya means composed of happiness, bliss. Where is that life now? We're always looking for it. Even the ants and the insects and the birds and the beasts are looking for it. They're always looking, you know, where is food, where is sex? That's what they know is happiness, you know. And, you know, how do I get free from danger? You know, but somehow to get to the point of peace and joy and happiness, Can't be found. It will not be found on a material platform. Impossible. Right? The verse, Sadasa Mudvigna Diyama Sadgrahat. Prahlad Maharaj says to his father, oh, best of the demons, this is the best thing I learned today. His father, what is the best thing? Tat Sadhu Mundi. Sadhu in this case means the best. Asura Varya Dehi, oh, best of the demons. Varya Dehinam. For the living entity, he's saying, Sadasa Mudvigna Diyama Sadgrahat. They're always in anxiety. Samudmagna diyam. The intelligence, the mind, is always very much disturbed. Why? Asadgrahat. Because they've grabbed onto the impermanent for dear life. That's all we know. You know? We're permanent. That's lesson one. That's lesson A of the ABCs of Krishna consciousness. The jayate miyate vakadach. The soul either born or died. Okay, we know that. So therefore, I'm in a temporary situation now. This is unconstitutional. And I'm trying to enjoy this holocaust, says Bhaktivinoda Thakur in one song. You know, in the middle of the ocean, it's just like the Titanic. You know, they're going down, and the band played on, right? Somehow, let's forget, you know, and just for another moment, we'll dance and we'll think that, you know, everything is okay. That's what we're all doing. We're all going down. You know, I mean, we're going to leave this body. So, but, oh, let's forget. We'll forget about it. We'll try to enjoy now. You know, that's far in the future. Isn't that it? The whole material life is a life of denial. You know, it says, Prabhu, you're in denial, you know? Isn't it that you go to a psychiatrist? Yeah, I'm denying, you know, the real situation. I can't deal with it. So you have some compensation, you know? You eat too much, or you drink, or you take drugs, or you get into whatever, right? It's all denial of the reality of your situation. But all material life is denial. The whole thing. But Krishna consciousness is acceptance. Is looking reality straight in the face and dealing with it. That's really what it takes. So Krishna is now telling Arjun exactly, you know, what the reality is. And that in this particular verse, he's encouraging him to act. The idea is that we can't succeed in our quest for enlightenment, to get out of this material world, by ignoring the position we're in now. We're conditioned souls with senses, mind, and intelligence that has been saturated with material desire since time immemorial. In the third chapter, Krishna will say, this is how material desire covers the knowledge of the living entity. Through the senses and the mind and the intelligence. So, I'll ask you for some examples. How does lust or material desire enter the senses? What's an example of one of the desires that bewilders the soul? Just for the senses before we get to the mind. Yeah?
Well, sometimes if I'm distributing books at a farmer's market, they're playing reggae music and I used to be attached to that. And so my ears just naturally kind of... it steals my mind away, and then I have to really focus.
Okay, this is kind of an innocent example. A more like regular example of a conditioned self.
Sankirtan.
Another sound. Okay, go ahead.
Especially at the colleges, we'll see just about any PV, provocative clothing.
Provocative clothing, yes. Scantily dressed. Oh, that can be very distracting. I'm thinking more in terms of, like, you know, someone who's addicted to tobacco or... any kind of drug, you know. The point is that we know. You know, the knowledge is there. It's printed on the pack. Since the 60s, I remember when they started it. Cigarette smoking is hazardous to your health. Okay, I know that. I can't stop. You keep smoking, right? Or, oh, that's not enough? Okay, we'll have these big ads, you know. I'm not a perfect example, but I saw... When I was working in a hospital in the early 70s, before I joined, I was the inhalation guy. I'd take around the oxygen and, okay, Mr. Jones, please try to get some sputum up, you know, like that. I would hit, you know, like try to, people who are in bad shape. I remember people on emphysema from a lifetime of smoking, you know, where you can't smoke. You can't breathe, rather, you know. It's scary, you know, you can hardly get a good breath, you know. And still, they're hanking for cigarettes. You know, I didn't see this, but you hear about this, how, give me a cigarette while, you know, the nurse isn't watching. You know. And all the lifetime. It's not that you don't know. It's that you can't stop. It's that your senses have overwhelmed your intelligence. Now, the same thing happens with the mind. You know, the mind gets some idea, gets some fixation. You know, obsessive fixation. And you know it's bad for you. I mean, the addiction works with the mind and the senses. The senses, you know, the mind is the sixth sense. So, instead of drawing on your good intelligence, the mind's obsessive desire for something harmful, you know, overwhelms the intelligence. And the intelligence department starts figuring out ways that you can get the illicit, the damaging subject, you know. Meat eating. I mean, it's proven. You know, with the advent of the internet, no one really can get the excuse of being in the dark. If you search it out on the internet, you know, or anywhere, you'll find that meat eating is bad for your health, it's very expensive, and it's killing the planet. We all need the planet, right, to live, you know. So you know, what's good about it? You know, plus the ethical thing of all this pain, you know, inflicted on these innocent animals. From every direction, it's a horror. And yet, it's going on. Who can deny, you know, that if they want to know this thing, you know? But the desire to eat the meat is overwhelming the intelligence. So the idea is we need to use the mind and the intelligence and the senses in a way that purifies them of this. That's the whole idea. So we have to act. That will come up in the next chapter, the Karma Yoga. You can't just stop acting. You can't get nice karma. Remember I spoke about nice karma yesterday. Nice karma is a state of working without getting any karma. Good or bad. That's Krishna consciousness. You're not responsible. You don't want the fruit. You're not working to, you know, for Krishna to go to some heavenly planet or enjoy something. You're simply working out of pure affection for Krishna, you know, or out of duty, knowing that this will lead me to the point of spontaneous love. That's, you know, still selfless, completely selfless. So there's no karma. But Krishna says in the next chapter, you can't get that by just stopping work. You can't even maintain the body by not working. So better to begin karma yoga by using the senses for the sacrifice. Sacrifice, the idea. Even if you can't remember Krishna at every moment. We know that. But the activity of serving anyway will bring you to the point of understanding and then constant remembrance. This is the science of bhakti yoga. You have to begin from where you're at. Not that we compromise the philosophy, but the process has to be available to everyone. That's the whole genius of this. That's why in the sixth chapter, Arjuna, you know, prays, he admits to Krishna, I can't do this. He recommends, you know, going out to the forest. He outlines Ashtanga yoga there, right? Out to the forest, completely free from sex life. You know, practicing pranayama and all of it, that, you know, living alone, completely alone, you know. And Arjuna says, the mind, vayu eva sadushkam, it's like trying to control the wind. And so he, I don't think I can do it. Yeah, you can do it by practice. And so Arjuna says, well, what if I fail? Right? So, well, I'll have no standing in either sphere. Either. So Krishna says, well, actually, you're right. You know, the best yogi is one who's always thinking of me with love, and you're already on that platform, you know, so he's encouraging. Go ahead.
Was Lord Krishna presenting that path, the path of Dhyana Yoga, just to basically present it and then rebuke it?
No, the thing is, it's a bona fide path.
But not in this age, though. I mean, this was spoken at the beginning of the Kali Yuga.
I know, but the thing is, what I get from that, you know, what I get from that, from the commentators, there's a section there from 20 to 23, I think it is, where he describes samadhi. He describes the goal of the yoga. And, you know, the way Srila Prabhupada presents it, of course, all of this is available in Krishna consciousness. In other words, we're not giving up on meditative yoga. We're just approaching it from a different, a more practical direction. So, yes, the process is such that it's not feasible for this age. But don't think that the description there of, for instance, the lamp in a windless place, the mind, you know, completely absorbed in transcendence, is not there in bhakti yoga. That's also there. So Krishna is presenting this, you know, describing, yes, it's very difficult and practically impossible for almost anyone in this age, but it is possible for a rare few. But the benefits that you can accrue from this dhyana yoga, you will get from bhakti yoga. That's why he begins the next chapter. You see, the thing is, if your object of meditation, right, we're trying to control the mind. The whole idea is, oh, you got to control the mind. Bring it, you know, back under the control of the self, right? From wherever and whatever the mind wanders, bring it back under the control of the self. And we understand that self is the big-ass self. That's Krishna, the super soul. In other words, you have to bring it back and think of Krishna. We experience it every day when we chant japa. So, at the end of the chapter, he says that the greatest yogi is one who's always thinking of me within his heart, worshiping me with faith. Right? The next verse describes maya sakta manaprata, how your mind can become attached to me. Now, if your mind is attached to something, there's no question of having to control it and bring it back. That's why I was the example of these poor kids who get absorbed in these video games. There's nothing transcendental about it, but they're absorbed. They're in samadhi. But it's not a healthy samadhi. You know, the object of meditation is dragging them down. It's the lower modes. But they forget the body. You know, so this absorption, but here is maya saktamana. Here I'm giving you this knowledge now in the seventh chapter, the beginning of the essential middle six chapters. Prabhupada says this is the heart of the Gita, by which your mind can become attached to me. In other words, don't go off to the mountains. Stay here and see. But when you see the sun, the light of the sun and the moon, know that that's me. When you taste water, know that that's me. Bhumarapa olovaya. Do you see? In other words, you can be a walking meditator. Everything you see can remind you of Krishna. It should. And it will, provided that you're in the mood of using everything in Krishna's service that you can. You see? Okay, let's go on. Yoga stakuru karmani.
Yoga stakuru karmani.
Sangam chukva dhananjaya. Siddhya siddhyo samo bhutva. Samatvang yoga uchite. Perform your duty equipoised, O Arjuna, abandoning all attachment to success or failure. Such equanimity is called yoga. Purport. Krishna tells Arjuna that he should act in yoga. And what is that yoga? Yoga means to concentrate the mind upon the Supreme by controlling the ever-disturbing senses. And who is the Supreme? The Supreme is the Lord. And because he himself is telling Arjuna to fight, Arjuna has nothing to do with the results of the fight. Gain or victory are Krishna's concern. Arjuna is simply advised to act according to the dictation of Krishna. The following of Krishna's dictation is real yoga, and this is practiced in the process called Krishna consciousness. By Krishna consciousness only can one give up the sense of proprietorship. One has to become the servant of Krishna, or the servant of the servant of Krishna. That is the right way to discharge duty in Krishna consciousness, which alone can help one to act in yoga. Arjuna is a Kshatriya, and as such he is participating in the Varnashram Dharma institution. It is said in the Vishnu Puran that in the Varnashram Dharma, the whole aim is to satisfy Vishnu. No one should satisfy himself, as is the rule in the material world. But one should satisfy Krishna. So unless one satisfies Krishna, one cannot correctly observe the principles of Varnashram Dharma. Indirectly, Arjuna was advised to act as Krishna told him. So the Varnashram, as soon as Varnashram comes up, I always think of the verse from the first canto. Ata pum vir dvida shrestha Varnashram vibhagasha sunasitasya dharma sa sankside haritoshanam. That the Varnashram system, Varnashram and Vibhagasha, this is divisions, these eight divisions. Suanustitasya. Suanustitasya means very nicely following all of your rules and regulations, your duties, you know, is perfect when Hari is satisfied. Sanksiti Haritoshan. Otherwise, it has no meaning. And factually speaking, it can't be sustained. There'll always be the Varnas. There'll always be the intelligent class, the bossy class, and those who know how to make money, either through agriculture or some other way, and the vast mass of manual laborers are just trying to get by. In every society, you'll find that. you know. But that's not varnashram. That's just a perverted reflection of the varna part. And because, you know, if there's no real brahminical class, although there will be an intellectual class, then the whole thing becomes corrupted. Either the kshatriyas, you know, lord it over everyone else, and you have something like the Middle Ages, you know, where you have your courtiers who are advising the king how he can best dominate his little corner of England or, you know, Saxony or something, you know, and you have all your serfs who are just trying to, you know, get by. And, you know, and then you have, you know, your farmers who own a little bit of land. They can, but that's just animal life, basically. The perfection or meaning comes when Krishna is in the center. And that's the only way everyone can be satisfied. How are you going to get these shudras to be satisfied being shudras? You know, only if you have big kirtans. Only if you have big feasts and festivals, like in Hare Krishna's. Then anyway, who cares what you do? You know, I joined, smart guy, supposedly, you know. But clean the bathroom, take out the trash. Okay, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. If you're not chanting Hare Krishna, you get resentful. Why do I have to take out the trash? You know, and so you have revolution, you have discord. Always, in my short lifetime, I've seen, never has there been a period where, you know, there's been labor peace, where there's been peace of any kind, there's been a war going on somewhere. You know, because this group isn't satisfied. They think more of this belongs to them. Or somebody up top thinks that we can conquer, you know. So that's. But if truly Krishna's in the center, then you're getting satisfaction from within. And the whole society, if it's guided properly, is really meant for the glorification of the Lord. And the thing about Krishna consciousness is that you become pleased when someone else serves Krishna nicely. Because your pleasure is in Krishna's pleasure. Like for instance, the perfect example is deity worship, right? So the pujaris are doing their service, you know. We're not on the altar. I don't get on the altar anymore. I never dressed. I used to go on the altar. But, you know, and if they do their service nicely, then Krishna is beautiful and you're pleased, right? So you can congratulate the pujaris, right? Great. Cooking, you know. Krishna's pleased. You're pleased. What's not to like? You see? Kirtan. How wonderful it is when someone is skilled at playing the drum. You know, we're so lucky to have Giriraj Gopal around, you know. Hopefully you can pass on some of that knowledge. But you see, well, everybody's service just makes everyone else happy. Whereas when you're trying to compete for sense gratification objects, then there develops all kinds of friction in society. And that's exactly what's being spoken of in the morning class. The morning class, I'm going to give class tomorrow, hopefully. And we'll try to wrap up this whole section. And it's just like that. Krishna says when people are too attached to the sense objects, then inevitably competition arises. And the word for competition in quarrel? Kali. That's why it's called Kali Yuga. Kali means fighting and quarreling and bickering. And from that, you know, comes anger, you know, and everything else. And everyone becomes in anxiety and falls, you know, completely opposite of Krishna consciousness. But if the center of society is not sense gratification, but it's actually serving Krishna, that's the central purpose of a society, and that's what this little society is meant for, then you can be satisfied with practically nothing. You know? Because you're getting the greatest thing. You're filled up. We just, you know, that verse, we were going over the verses in the 10th chapter. Machitam agata prana bodhiyantak parasparam katayantastamam nitya tushanti chadamanti cha. Tushanti means satisfied, just like there's another verse, maybe you know, I knew you know these shlokas. It says, bhakti pareshanu bhavo virakti anyata chaisa chika eka kala pudyamanasa yatashataksu tushti pushti chudapayo anugasa. The great verse. This is by I always forget which of the nine Yogendras is speaking. But they're teaching Maharaj Nimi. And they compare bhakti, the experience of bhakti, you know, mature bhakti, with taking a nice prasadam feast. So he says, for one who is truly surrendered to Krishna and is serving Krishna nicely, three things occur practically simultaneously. Bhakti, para isha anubhava, and viraktir anyatra cha. Srila Prabhupada would always quote the first line of this verse plus the one word at the second line. So bhakti pareshanu bhavarakti ranyatracha. So what that means is bhakti means the pleasurable experience of serving Krishna in loving devotion. That's what that bhakti is. Para isha anubhava means direct experience of Krishna. You know, seeing, actually, you know, revelation. And virakti anyatracha means detachment from everything else. Now, the comparison is virakti anyatracha, chaisha, trika eka kala, practically simultaneously, papadyama yatashna taksyu, as one is honoring, eating. Tushti pushti chodapaya, with every bite, one feels pleasure. And also nourishment. Pushti, tushti and pushti. Pushti means like literally nourishment. And chudapayo anugasam means your hunger is gone. You don't feel hungry for anything else, you see? So this is devotional service. So you don't feel a need for anything else. It's wonderful. Just think of this, that the experience of Krishna, and even in our neophyte state, we're experiencing to some degree, you know, Krishna's presence in our lives. Otherwise, we couldn't go on with this Krishna consciousness. And it's compared to nourishment for the soul. The soul is nourished. Did you ever wonder how these Goswamis can go around eating, you know, practically nothing? You know, every other day, Raghunath Das is just taking a little buttermilk. Well, where's the vitamins? Where's the minerals? Where's the calories? No, he's being nourished by Krishna consciousness. Nourishment. Sometimes you hear how people are just living on the sunshine and the air, you know, mystic yogis, you know. But this is really living on, you know, experiencing Krishna. That's what is being described. So we are also experiencing that to a small degree, even in this state. And this, you know, the bhakti and the pradesha and the virakti, we're experiencing that to some degree. So that makes it possible. It makes all of this make sense. Now here, one of the things that I noted is samatvam yoga uchite, the equanimity of mind, very important. And that will be emphasized. Arjuna will ask, what is the symptoms of one whose intelligence is steady? You have to come to this point of steadiness, you know, that the mind is not being whipped around by the modes of nature like that. So Krishna says, you know, be situated in yoga, don't be attached, this word sangha, you know, to the fruits, sangam tukva, and perfection or imperfection, be equipoised. Very important, the idea of determination. Because you're going against the grain here, you know. We're all like flowing down the river of birth and death, you know, modes of nature. And we're trying to swim upstream, you know. We're going, that's why people think we're crazy, you know. It's like reversal. You remember that thing about reverse? Everything is reverse, right? So, in the material world, if there's some perfection, you know, they strive to win this a prize or, you know, get this girl or to get this degree or something, then that's perfection. But if, and you're happy. But if there's no perfection, if you fail, if you get fired from your job, you know, or you don't get a job or you don't get a degree or you don't get the girl or the boy or whatever, then you're depressed. There's anything but samobhutva, you see? But in Krishna consciousness, the very effort is success. The very attempt to chant, to serve Krishna, even if you're not doing it very perfectly, that is already success. Krishna reciprocates with that. He's seeing your sincerity. Are you really trying to chant? You know, did I tell you this story about Tamal Krishnamurti told this story when he was preaching in China. You know, they have a trouble with the pronunciation. Of the, as we do also, but they have a specific kinds of trouble, you know, pronouncing the Sanskrit. We think we're pronouncing properly, but we're not. But the R's, you know, famously, the Chinese can't pronounce the R. That comes out L. So this one fellow is trying to chant, you know, Hare Krishna, there's a lot of R's in the mantra. Look at it. Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Lama, Hare Lama. So, but he was sincere, trying to chant. So, you know, Maharaj didn't say, no, you can't chant. Like, keep chanting. And gradually, you know, it improved because Krishna saw his sincerity and he was able to pronounce, you know. And he ended up chanting 64 rounds a day. He became very, very advanced at chanting. So, anyway, the point is that it's already perfect as soon as you start. But the material side, It's never perfect. Even if it's so-called perfect, that perfection will be finished. So you see that it's categorically different. So be steady in yoga. That's the idea, the steadiness. Utsahan, shayat, daryat. Enthusiasm, don't be attached to not doing your duty. Be enthusiastic. And if you don't, you know, feel the enthusiasm, then jump up and down anyway. Krishna will give you the enthusiasm. And then, but we have to be patient and we have to be determined. You know. Yeah.
This verse is talking about Varnashram Dharma. I was just wondering, what is the ashram part of Varnashram applied to? Are there sudras who take sannyas?
No.
And are there, does it only apply to the Brahminical class?
I think the Kshatriyas can take sannyas. Vaishyas? I'm not sure. Yeah, the upper three classes can take sannyas, but the shudras don't take sannyas.
They're not even really a part of the ashram.
They can go to Gurukul, but they generally get vocational training. You know what I mean?
Oh.
You know, like that. They're not suited to it. You know, to learn the shastra. But in this age, everything is so mixed up. Who knows who anyone is? You know, was I a Brahmin? No, I was a total Shudra, Chandal, Mechayavana. You know, but somehow being in touch with this movement, get purified. Okay, I learned some shlokas. You know, Brahmin. You know. But the point is, it doesn't really matter. In other words, we can take up our roles in Krishna consciousness, and you know we can follow these ashrams. These ashrams are important. Ashram means a place of spiritual advancement, and it's meant to be grihastha ashram also, vanaprastha sannyas, and of course brahmacharya ashram. So there are rules by which you can progress spiritually in those ashrams, and you know the varna part. Is in one sense, secondary for us, because we can do anything for Krishna. Ultimately, it doesn't matter, you know. But in the course of time, as devotional service progresses, naturally, those who are we're following will engage us in a way that will best use our propensities for Krishna. You know that's also there. But I always like to give the example of a kirtan. You know, this is our main dharma. Is right, Harinam Sankirtan. You can do it for hours, you know. Rathiyatra. Where's the Varnashram Dharma there? There's no Varnas. Everyone's chanting together, Hare Krishna Hare Ram. You know? There's no... Oh, this is a Kshatriya dancing. Very nice Brahminical chanting there, Prabhu. We're just chanting and dancing, Hare Krishna Hare. You see? So ultimately, that's why Lord Chaitanya said famously, Naham Vipro, Nacha Narapatir, Napi Vaisho, Nashudro. Naham varni nacha grihapatir nova nasto yatirva. Abha. Kintu prodyan nikalaparamananda purnan vitabdir gopi bhartu padakamalayor dasa dasa anadasa. That my real position, this is Lord Chaitanya speaking, he's God himself, taking the role of a devotee. So as a devotee says, he goes through the whole varnashram, right? I'm not a Brahmin. Now, I am not a Kshatriya, Vaishyashudra. I'm not a Brahmachari, Grahastha, Vranapastha, Sannyasi. What are you? What do I identify? I'm simply the servant of the servant of the servant of the lotus feet of Krishna, who is the pleasure of the gopis, of the beloved of the gopis. Gopi Bhartu, the husband. Padakamalaya, these lotus feet. Dasa, Dasa, Anadasa. You know, the servant of the servant of the servant. So it is the Varna and Ashram. You may act in a certain Varna and Ashram, but it's all secondary in Krishna consciousness. But where there is a large number of devotees in a society, then it's most smooth to organize it that way. And the Shudras are happy doing their work. The Brahmins are happy. Everyone's happy. Because the happiness doesn't come from the kind of work you do or the status you have. That's caste consciousness. No, it's coming from your service to Krishna. You know, that's why Lord Chaitanya, he exalted the greatest Haridas Thakur, he's born outside Varnashram. You know, Rupa and Sanatan had been compromised working for the Muslims. Ramananda Roy wasn't a Brahmin, he was a Kayasta, a Shudra class, he was working as a clerk. So he broke all the rules, that was controversial. Same thing with Bhaktisiddhanta. He there was a lot of controversy, because he was breaking this caste consciousness. It doesn't have anything to do. Who is it?
Gandhi.
Yeah. Well, it should be rejected. But where possible, you know, it can be used in Krishna's service. Yes?
So it makes sense to organize a society according to Varnashram, but on a personal level, what does it matter whether or not we follow the Varnashram as long as we're in a situation where we are able to...
It all depends on the time and circumstance. In other words, like Brahmins, okay? So part of our Krishna consciousness is we have these sacrifices, you know, and that's important, you know, that the initiate, you know, has a fire sacrifice before the deities. Certainly the deity worship, there are many, you know, mantras and everything that's very restricted, standards of cleanliness. So there is a place for that, Brahminical culture. Basically, Prabhupada wanted to create a class of Brahmins, because without the head on society, you know, it's like, you know, there's no hope. Everybody is just misguided. So wherever we come from, we should try to, cultivate those Brahminical qualities. But our very nature may not be that we can learn so many shlokas and so many things. That's okay, you know. But we should try to understand the philosophy as far as possible, attend the classes, and do our, whatever we have to do with a clear mind and as much of the mode of goodness as possible, you know, to try to keep it that way. And the varnas will take care of themselves in ashram. We should want to become Brahmins, you know, so that we can help with the deity worship and we can learn, maybe perform some sacrifices. But if we can't, no loss, you know, because that's just external, ultimately. Lord Chaitanya said it's external to Ramananda Roy, didn't he? You know, there's a verse. Varnashramachatavadha purushena parakpaman vishnurara jade panta nanyatatoshakaranam. Now that verse says that if you simply follow your varna and ashram nicely, that's your worship of Vishnu. That's not our philosophy. You know, not that work is worship. No. First comes the worship, then the work will follow. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? In other words, Lord Chaitanya rejected this. Yes, we should try to worship Vishnu through the work that we do. But it's not that we should think that the work that we do is automatically worship of Vishnu. You see the difference? There's a big difference. So it takes good guidance. All right, let's go on. Durena yavadam karma.
Durena yavadam karma.
Buddhi yoga dhananjaya.
Buddhi yoga dhananjaya.
Buddhau sharanam
vichcha.
Kripana palahetavaha. O Dhananjaya, keep all abominable activities far distant by devotional service. And in that consciousness, surrender unto the Lord. Those who want to enjoy the fruits of their work are misers. Purport. One who has actually come to understand one's constitutional position as an eternal servitor of the Lord gives up all engagements save working in Krishna consciousness. As already explained, Buddhi Yoga means transcendental loving service to the Lord. Such devotional service is the right course of action for the living entity. Only misers desire to enjoy the fruit of their own work just to be further entangled in material bondage. Except for work in Krishna consciousness, all activities are abominable because they continually bind the worker to the cycle of birth and death. One should therefore never desire to be the cause of work. Everything should be done in Krishna consciousness for the satisfaction of Krishna. Misers do not know how to utilize the assets of riches which they acquire by good fortune or by hard labor. One should spend all energies working in Krishna consciousness, and that will make one's life successful. Like misers, unfortunate persons do not employ their human energy in the service of the Lord. Kripana palahetava. So the kripana is the miser. So we're running out of time. Maybe we can take this verse up on Monday again. It's an important one. But Buddhi Yoga, this Buddhi Yoga is coming up again. It appears in this chapter, also in the 10th chapter. And Prabhupada defines this as Krishna consciousness. So how do we keep all abominable activities far distant? Only by devotional service. When you come into the realm of devotional service, then it includes all ethical activity, all moral activity. There's no question of it. And, you know, even though Arjuna was supposedly arguing from a moral standpoint here not to fight, the greatest standard of morality is to follow Krishna's orders. And so, in this particular case, the moral thing to do is to fight in this battle and to kill all these opposing elements. So, it's not a avaram karma. It's not an abominable activity for Arjuna to follow, to fight. It would really be abominable for him to desist from fighting. That's the idea. And Prabhupada is, although he doesn't say it so specifically here, the greatest miser is one who misuses the treasure of the human body, which is a rare thing. Nir deham adyam sulabham sudulam. Deham adyam means a body which is perfectly suited to cross over the ocean of birth and death. So I'll end with that verse, and maybe I'll give you the miser's verse. There's a verse where a devotee prays to be a miser. You know? I'll tell you about that. So he says, Nirdeham adyam sulabham sudulabham plavam sukalpam gurukarna dharam. Mayanukulena dabasviteritam puman bababdim nataretsa atmaha. This verse is recently in our class we read. I don't know if you recall. So, the human body, nirdeham, is adyam. It's full of all facilities. You know, A-D-H-Y-A-M. Sulabham sudulabham. It is automatically gotten in the course of one's evolution through the species, sulabham, but is sudulabham in the sense of being very rare. You know, there's only 400,000 species of human beings, and the actual count of human beings on the planet is only, what are you, 6 billion or so? And among those, who's really interested in this? You see, it's very rare to find an intelligent human being who's not leading an animalistic life. So, sulabham sudulabham, and plavam tukalpam, a very nicely constructed boat for taking one across the ocean of birth and death. And it has a nice captain in the form of the guru, spiritual master, and favorable winds, says Krishna, my instructions, the Vedic literature. Maya anukulena nabasviteritam. Anukulena, favorable winds. So with all of these facilities, if one does not cross over the ocean of birth and death, then one is atmaha, a killer of the soul. We find this word in Isha Upanishad. Of course, you can't kill a soul, but you can bury it in the lower species for millions of births. So it's like, here we are. We have this valuable human life. Don't misuse it. That's what the Vedas say. Tamas ima, jyotirgama. Don't stay in darkness. Come to the light. Don't stay in ignorance. Come to the knowledge. Okay, so now the miser verse. In the Padyavali, one devotee prays, Vichayani, Vicharyani, Vichinjani, Punak Punaham. Kripanasya, Dananiva, Punamani, Bhavantu, Naha. Meaning, compelled to constantly collect and count his precious hoard, the miser contemplates his wealth with avaricious aims. Please bless me to become a miser who's compelled, O Lord, to constantly collect and count and contemplate your names. So that's the way we can even dovetail our miserly sentiments. All glory to Shiva Prabhupada.